The Office of the State Historian is proud to present the New Mexico Digital History Project podcast series.
Thank you, and I want to thank Dennis and Esteban once again for supporting my work. This is the second time I've had the honor of being a fellow in the program, and it certainly helps. Every penny helps. And this year, for this fellowship, I've gone a bit farther afield in terms of archives and spent time in the Supreme Court archive and up in TA at the courthouse trying to dig a little bit deeper into the story of the Tierra Maria land grant. And, you know, I have this photo up here, this very probably most famous photo from the courthouse raid. Usually when Tierra Maria, or at least the conflict over property in Tierra Maria, is discussed popularly in the press, the focus is, of course, on the courthouse raid in June of 1967. This, of course, was a photo that the national media latched onto, I guess, to show the sort of the conflict between modernity and tradition, the donkey and the tank. As some of you may recall, Governor Cargill called out the National Guard after the courthouse raid as they were looking for Tiarena and others. And as a result, often popular discussions of the Tierra Maria land grant conflict focuses on this sort of very fantastic and in many ways sort of inscrutable event of in June of 1967, this sort of this land grant war that erupted and for many people seemed to come out of nowhere. Historians have, of course, taken this on much differently, although interestingly there's very little historical research on the Tierra Maria land grant, but what has been done has focused almost entirely on the 19th century, on exactly what happened when Mexico distributed the land grant. And that history usually ends at the beginning of the 20th century. So there's this missing piece, really, in this conflict over TA. How did this conflict develop? What were the contours of the struggle over property in TA, and how did it develop? And that's what I want to focus on today. And I just want to say, by way of a caveat, this is an incredibly complicated and complex and long story. And, my first instinct always, as someone who does historical research, is to really pay attention to the facts and develop a very careful narrative. And that ended up being about 35 pages. So I said, that's going to be boring for me to just read to you all. So what I want to do here, actually, is really a more... Right when I start, I have sort of a more illustrated story that really focuses on trying to weave the legal history over this conflict, because the Tierra Maria land grant ended up in court probably more than any other land grant in New Mexico. Five major court cases in the 20th century. But if we focus just on the court cases, then we really miss what was happening, the sort of material struggle over property in TA. And so I want to try to weave those two stories together to really describe what was happening in TA. Because otherwise, it really seems, I think, in retrospect, that some of the claims made by TA land grant heirs in the middle to later part of the 20th century seem outrageous and don't really make sense if we just focus on what the courts had to say in their interpretations of these property claims. So I do want to briefly start with the 19th century granting of the land grant originally, but really as a means to sort of bring us up to speed to the 20th century and also to point out some of the problems that confront anyone making a property claim based on anything that happened in the 19th century. So the Tierra Maria land grant is a Mexican-era land grant. It was distributed by Mexico in 1832 after request by a wealthy and prominent Abiquiú landowner named Manuel Martinez. Originally, Manuel Martinez had requested a private land grant for he and his sons. The Corporation of Abiquiú, which at the time was the local assembly, or the city council, if you will, challenged that request and forwarded on to the territorial deputation that there was plenty of land in the Tierra Maria region, and it could have could support 500 families. And to give it just to Manuel Martinez and his sons would be unfair to the rest of the sheep herders in the Abiquiu area. And so that 1832 grant was really a community grant rather than the private grant that Manuel Martinez had requested. One of the problems with any contemporary property claims based on an 1832 grant was that no permanent settlement occurred after that grant was made. Shortly after that grant, hostilities with the Utes intensified throughout the north. In the early 40s, land grants throughout all the land grants north of Abiquiu were abandoned. And that was precisely at the time that Manuel Martinez and other settlers would have been trying to establish permanent settlements. The region, both before the 1832 grant and after, was used seasonally by sheep herders from Abiquiu, but there's no record of any permanent settlements prior to the signing of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. So when the United States entered New Mexico in 1846, there was no permanent settlement based on this grant in the Tierra Maria area. When the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was signed in February of 1848, there was still no permanent settlement in the Tierra Maria area. And so the problem, of course, for any contemporary claims based on the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo is trying to establish what right anyone would have based on the treaty if there were no permanent settlements of it, existing at the time. In 1856, one of Manuel Martinez's sons, Francisco Martinez, petitioned to the Surveyor General at the time, William Pelham, for the Tierra Maria land grant. And after a short investigation by Pelham, he forwarded on a recommendation to Congress that they approve a grant in the name of Francisco Martinez. Although in the short description that Pelham described, forwarded on to Congress, he did make it clear that the original Mexican grant was a community grant. He even described to Congress in the report the dispute and how it was resolved, and that what ended up being resolved was a community land grant. Congress, however, confirmed the grant in Francisco Martinez's name and in his name only, and effectively created a private land grant. And in the court cases I'll come to in a little while, the courts interpreted that confirmation to be a grant de novo, a new grant that Congress made to Francisco Martinez. And throughout the 20th century refused to go behind Congress and even consider anything that happened prior to 1860. Francisco Martinez, as you could imagine, well, maybe you can't, but is remembered in different ways among folks in TA today. There are some that consider Francisco Martinez to be one and the same with other speculators that were trying to acquire land throughout northern New Mexico during the territorial period. And there are others that consider him to be the Poblador Principal, someone that was serving the interests of settlers and trying to reacquire the land after the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. It's probably impossible to try to determine exactly whether he was serving the interests of the community or himself, but there is sort of a interesting documentary evidence that can give us an idea. The land grant was confirmed to Francisco Martinez in 1860. In 1861, Francisco Martinez started to distribute deeds to the property to various settlers in Abiquiu. Now, again, there was no permanent settlement in Tierra Maria throughout the 10-year period that he was distributing deeds to other folks from Abiquiu. All of these deeds described not only small private parcels of land that people would own themselves, but also gave them rights and access to a commons, to the rest of the land grant. The deeds, a few deeds occurred in early 1861, but in July 1861, a number of settlers from Abiquiu sent a letter to the Surveyor General complaining about Francisco Martinez, and this is my translation, by the way, so bear with me, but if anyone wants to take a look at this afterwards and maybe compare translations. And in this short complaint read as follows: Mr. Surveyor General, the people who have colonized the well-known Tierra Maria have encountered some embarrassments and difficulties as a result of Don Francisco Martinez and his brothers, who were the primary cause for many people to abandon their personal interests in a place which many have devoted their lives to in defense, all based on the promises of Mr. Martinez, promises that he made before he became the verified settler, promises that have been and continue to be ratified through the toil and work of many poor men, and promises that have not been honored. Although we have handled the matter with a sense of humor, we know well the damage that is being done to our interests, interests and rights we have acquired through our work in the aforementioned grant. The people appeal to your authority to give your opinion regarding what rights we have in the land grant, given the work we have put in. The 10th of this same month, again, this was July of 1861, the 10th of this same month, we will have a meeting. It's not clear whether the meeting was going to be held in Abiquiú or Taos, actually. We will have a meeting, and we place our hope in the kindness of your consideration in our dispute and provide us a response in a convenient manner. There were, about a year after this letter was written, a flurry of deeds occurred in which Martinez was distributing rights widely to people throughout Abiquiú. It seems possible that this letter had something to do with that, and perhaps we could speculate that Martinez was actually serving as a sort of poblador principal, the first settler representing the interests of others and trying to settle TA. And the deeds that he distributed served as a way to acknowledge those promises that he made to others. And certainly, if we look at the conveyances he made, and let's look at the left side for a moment, if we can. The first deed was made in March 2nd of 1861. They continued through to the end of 1865, with most of these deeds being distributed in 63 and 64. My initial request for funding from the scholars program was really to look at the question of these deeds, which historically have been referred to as hijuelas in TA. And one of the reasons for that is because many of the legal questions in the 20th century have hinged on whether or not these hijuelas were actually deeds and gave individual settlers real property rights in Tierra Maria. And throughout the 20th century, when this land grant found its way into court, those were the questions that the heirs to people who received these hijuelas claimed certain property rights, both in common and small private property rights. And this is sort of a train of private property rights, claimed that these weren't deeds, that these don't stand the test of a deed, and therefore should be rejected. And in fact, as I'll describe, the courts rejected that these actually were deeds. So that it's a bit of a mystery, really, what Martinez had in mind here, because certainly, so I want to spend a moment just talking about the hijuelas. First of all, hijuelas are common legal documents found usually in wills and estates. They're not property conveyances in the strict sense that a deed would be. And certainly, even in territorial New Mexico and prior, hijuelas were never used to convey property unless they were distributing property within an estate to certain heirs. The first problem with trying to verify these hijuelas in the strict legal sense is that we don't have Francisco Martinez's will. And the list of these hijuelas would have appeared in his will, describing the distributions. The second problem with the hijuelas, and this is the one the courts took up, were that they don't seem to even be hijuelas, much less deeds. This is the definition of an hijuela from legal dictionary that would have been used at the time in territorial New Mexico that describes an ijuela as an instrument literally given to each heir, distributing property, partitioning the property to various heirs. And so I've spent quite a bit of time trying to understand how ijuelas were used in territorial New Mexico. And they have only been used in three land grants of the dozens and dozens of land grants in New Mexico. It's very rare to find ijuelas having anything to do with land grants, but they're very common, particularly in the territorial period. And they served a very interesting purpose. Usually ijuelas were documents that allowed people to distribute certain kinds of property in fractional shares for property that otherwise couldn't be distributed. So I found ijuelas that distributed mattresses to three heirs, or ijuelas that distributed the vigas from a house to one heir and the room to another heir, or ijuelas that distributed the tree to one heir and the land under the tree to another heir. Right? And so in one respect, this is a useful property document in territorial New Mexico as people were confronted by these two legal traditions that had certain contradictions related to property, and it was much more difficult to establish common property rights in territorial New Mexico and be sure that those common property rights survived that will and existed for the heir, and also wasn't then split up and distributed and sold off. And so in one sense, the ijuela then makes sense for Francisco Martinez de Hughes. If he was thinking to himself in territorial New Mexico, well, there's a common property isn't respected in this legal process. If I give deeds out, those will just be sold off and the common lands could be dispossessed from the land grant. If I use ijuelas, then of course this property can't be alienated from the land grant. The problem is, an ijuela usually looks like this. It's literally a receipt. That is, that when an estate, when a state is adjudicated, it's literally given to the person to whom receives whatever property is described in the will. So they're given this ijuela, and they hold this ijuela. And so often in wills, you'll find a list of ijuelas given out, and then the actual copies of ijuelas that a person received themselves as an heir, maybe from their parents or from their grandparents. And it's usually always titled ijuela, describes who the ijuela is to, and then it just itemizes the property that the ijuela provides to the heir. And if it's land, and often in estates, land was distributed with an ijuela through an estate, then a separate deed was then constructed based on that estate. So there would be two separate documents based on that will. The ijuelas in TA don't do this at all. They literally are deeds. They look like deeds. They read like deeds. They're not itemized lists. They didn't appear in a will or an estate and then get distributed to certain heirs. This is an 1863 ijuela from TA distributed to one of the settlers from Abiquiu, from Francisco Martinez. This is the actual ijuela, and this is the translated and typed version that was used in a court case in the 20th century. These are really quite interesting documents because they have two separate paragraphs with two separate kinds of granting clauses. And so they're always quite different, which was not unusual in territorial New Mexico for deeds to vary slightly by location or by whoever was writing them, because it should be noted that there were very few lawyers and even fewer law books in New Mexico during the territorial period. But in each case, clear language is used that describes land being granted and conveyed to the settler. And in all cases, it's this. You can see here, in this case, this settler was granted and conveyed 100 varas along a river valley in the TA area. And then at the bottom, usually in a second paragraph, their rights to the commons are described. And a different verb is used to grant the settlers' rights to the commons than was used to grant them possession of the small plots of land that would be their private ownership. And in the legal cases that followed in the 20th century, and I'll come to this, the parsing out of these verbs became really the key legal interpretation that stripped away common property access. So the fact that very clear granting verbs were used for these small parcels of land became overwhelming legal evidence that they did own these parcels. And so many of those were maintained by settlers. But the fact that different verbs were used, donate was one that was used, and to the courts, 20th century courts, donate doesn't have the same legal status as grant and convey. But nonetheless, these don't look like anything like hijuelas. And I've spent a lot of time talking to people in TA about where does this word, why are these called hijuelas? I mean, because they never actually say hijuela anywhere on them. They don't look like hijuelas. They don't do the things that hijuelas did legally in territorial New Mexico. They don't serve the same purpose, right? And in one sense, what they serve a purpose, they renovate Francisco Martinez's memory, right? The fact that he did this, the fact that he acknowledged these property rights through whatever kind of document served to renovate his reputation in TA among some people, but doesn't really help the property claims of people, particularly in the 20th century. Let me go back a second. Martinez delivered these deeds really up until the last hijuela was distributed on December 9th, 1865, and then made probably the most important transaction for the history of property rights in TA when he sold on June 1st, 1871, a deed to Francisco Manzanares. Now, it's interesting because the deed that he sold to Francisco Manzanares is precisely the same as every one of these hijuelas, but he used a different verb in the second paragraph of this deed to Manzanares. And in the 20th century, the courts latched on to that deed. And this became, instead of the last hijuela, it became the first conveyance of the entire land grant. This is the Spanish language, and this is the translated version. Again, these documents were prepared for court cases in the 30s and 40s. This is where I got them. The difference here is this was flipped. Whereas in the hijuelas, the first paragraph described these small parcels of land that each settler would receive, and then in the second paragraph was described their rights to the entire land grant commons. In this one, it shows here that he's conveying rights to the land grant in its entirety, and then in the second paragraph, it's limited to 150 varas. All right, so in other words, it's written differently. Similar verbs are used, but this sort of rights to the entire land grant gets privileged. I don't have time to go into it today. Later, I'll just briefly mention this. But again, this was parsed out endlessly in a series of court cases, particularly one in the 1950s. And eventually, the courts determined that they had to ignore this paragraph and look only at this paragraph when determining whether or not this was an hijuela for 150 varas or was actually a conveyance of the entire land grant. And if you notice, this is pretty important because every private property claim that exists today within the boundaries of the land grant is traced to this transaction here in June of 1871. So it becomes fairly important. In the court cases during the 20th century, this question of who this guy Francisco Manzanares was, what he had, what was his intention, what was Martinez's intention in this property transaction was very important. But the courts wouldn't consider anything that happened prior to that transaction. They wouldn't consider the social context within which that transaction would have been made. And it's again important to note there were still no permanent settlements in the TA area when that transaction happened. And in fact, Francisco Manzanares did lead a small group of settlers north from Abiquiú in 1874 and established the first permanent settlement on the T.A. Grant. But when he died, actually, he didn't die, actually. He apparently sold the entire land grant to Thomas Benton Catron in 1881 in a grant that many people at the time questioned as to whether it was a legitimate transaction. They questioned whether Manzanares, number one, had the right to do it, and number two, actually did it. But of course, they could never resolve that at the time because early in 1883, Manzanares disappeared. And so his will notes by his heirs that he just disappeared. And they didn't even wait a week. Literally a week after he disappeared, they opened up the will and distributed all the property. they got rid of it very quickly. But one thing that's interesting in Francisco Manzanares' will is that he lists 120 acres of farmland in the TA area, 120 acres of farmland, depending on the width of, or the, excuse me, the length of that 150 vars of land he received in the deed from Francisco Martinez. That could correspond quite closely. It does correspond close enough to suggest that perhaps even in his will, which was written before, he made this, apparently made this transaction with Catron. He considered his ownership in TA to be limited to 120 acres. Nonetheless, on December 31st, 1878, that was the date of the transaction. Catron didn't actually record it till much later, after Manzanares disappeared. But according to the deed that Thomas Catron filed with the county recorder, he bought the entire Tierra Maria land grant for $100. $100 in a quick claim deed, which would have made that, I guess, I don't know, 1/100th of a penny an acre for the entire Tierra Maria land grant. Again, it's important to note, though, that the grant still didn't have any viable, even by 1878, didn't have any large, viable, permanent settlements. There were some small settlements now that were no longer seasonal that seemed more permanent. The grant hadn't even yet been surveyed. It was surveyed shortly during this period. But again, the courts identified these two deeds as sort of these originating deeds to establish private property in the land grant. So this period is a sort of an important period, the late 19th century. During this period, the existence of the land grant as a real thing was a constant conflict in the TA and Chama area. Really up into the 1930s, there was great division in the community about whether this land grant really was a community land grant, whether it even did exist or not. People didn't recognize this land grant at the time as one that actually existed. And it really wasn't into the 1920s that organized efforts to try to revive these common property claims based on the Huelas began. And they began in the 1920s with really what was sort of semi-organized night riding by a group that most people recall now as a group called La Mano Negra. And La Mano Negra operated in TA and TA alone, burning haystacks, cutting fences, sending threatening letters to large landowners who weren't heirs, telling them to get out of TA. And this period of unrest in the Tierra Maria area lasted really throughout the 1920s, which didn't result in anyone abandoning any private property rights. Rather, it actually brought down a lot of pressure on small settlers in the area as the fencing intensified throughout the 1920s to the Tierra Maria land grant. And it really wasn't until the late 20s, early 30s, that a group of heirs began to organize in an effort to try to recover common property claims based on those Huelas to TA. And I should say that really beginning at this period, there was, and there remains today, this sort of conflict between those who claim these common property rights based on the Ijuelas and those who base these private property rights based on Francisco Martinez's claims, right? Whether it is a private grant or community grant. That's still a question politically today in TA. And this was from 38. This is sort of the first time that I've been able to locate that publicly a group calling itself, and at this time they called themselves the Corporation of Abiquiu. They took the name of the local assembly in Abiquiu from the 1830s that originally established the land grant as a common property claim. So they took that name and called the Tierra Mira Land Grant Board the Corporation of Abiquiu, and began to organize. And in June 38, had a large meeting in Los Ojos to try to bring together some of the heirs that claimed common property rights to TA. And again, it's important. It really wasn't until the 20s and 30s that large landowners began fencing in TA. So really between 1878, when Catron claimed private ownership of the grant, to the 1920s, the grant operated as a common property land grant, a community land grant. People were using the pastures and documented that in court cases and established that there was this communal use of upland resources for firewood and for grazing. But beginning in the late 1920s, when the sort of campaign of fence cutting and barn burning happened, that was when the fencing began in earnest and continued really into the 30s. But rather than continue that effort to try to intimidate non-heirs off the grant, a man named Medardo Abeta started organizing to try to bring together heirs, to bring together their documents, to bring together their claims, and sort of organize under the auspices of the Corporation of Abiquiu. And I should say today, if you talk to people about Medardo Abeta, he's remembered today, but he's not remembered very kindly. It's suggested that oral history about the man who started this effort is that he was in it for the money, he got paid off, and he destroyed all the documents that he collected, and nothing ever came of his efforts. That's sort of the story that's told about Medardo Abeta. The real story of Medardo Abeta is much more complicated. And the documents he collected still exist. His grandson lives in the area today, has those documents. And I've had an opportunity to talk to him about Medardo Abeta and look at some of those documents. And although I haven't been able to look at the documents yet, we've talked to him about those documents. And it seemed that Medardo Abeta was really the first to organize not only heirs who claimed property based on those Ijuelas, but also to resurrect the very idea that the grant even existed at all. I mean, for many people, they'd just given up the idea that it even existed. It was a myth. They didn't think that there would be any way they could actually prove that there was any land grant in the area. Shortly after that meeting, the Corporation of Abiquiu incorporated with the state of New Mexico. And let me read you. The object of their organization was a united effort toward peace, equity, and justice. These objectives shall reflect on the actions of the Corporation of Abiquiu, Merced de Tierra Maria, in an effort to protect the members which comprise it from the injustices and selfishness of tyrants and despots, of usurpers and encroachers of property, law, and justice, to file suits and litigations, to reacquire, to hold, to possess, to distribute through legal channels the rights, interests, privileges, parcels, timbers, and water rights that were prescribed and inherited from our forefathers, heirs, and assigns of the Tierra Maria grant. This was in 1832. All the things that they said they were doing, their object, they did for the next 40 years, to the late 1970s. And it began in the late 30s, by beginning to educate through the local newspaper. At the time, there was one English and Spanish newspaper in Tierra Maria, and various heirs would write articles explaining to local people what the history was of the land grant, what the basis of their property claims were, how they could prove that they had common property claims. And requiring anyone with a common property claim to register as a member of the Corporation of Abiquiu to deposit their documents with the treasurer of the Corporation of Abiquiu, and to sort of build this this sort of documentary history of their property rights, which they then used in court cases throughout the 30s and 40s. And it was around this time that the first court case concerning their property rights occurred. In 1938, one of the land companies... Go back and in 1938, a company that had purchased land from the Chama Valley Land Company filed a quiet title suit for property in TA. In the quiet title suit, they listed only other ranchers. Most of these were Colorado and Texas ranchers that they were identifying, and these were land and cattle companies like HND Land Company were who all traced their property documents, by the way, back to Catra. None of the land companies that HND Land Company sued for quiet title responded to the quiet title, but Medardo Abeta and 300 heirs intervened in the lawsuit. And so HND Land Company v. Suazo ended up being the first test of whether or not TA was a common property or a private property land grant. Unfortunately, the TA land grant heirs hired perhaps the worst lawyer in New Mexico, a guy named Robert La Follette, who was no relation to the La Follette from Wisconsin, the senator of the time from Wisconsin. I think he was a distant relative of Robert La Follette. But he was perhaps the worst attorney in New Mexico at the time. And there's some evidence that he was engaged in some land deals also at the same period. But there's no evidence that he benefited at all financially from his miserable representation of the Corporation of Abiquiu. The argument he made in court was that the HND Land Company can own no property in Tierra Maria because Francisco Martinez was but a trustee, not an owner of the grant in fee simple, but a trustee who managed the grant for the beneficiaries, who were those Ijuela holders that were identified in those documents from the 1860s. According to La Follette, in 1860, when the United States made that grant to Francisco Martinez, they had no right to make it a private property grant. In fact, they only had the right to transfer their trusteeship to someone else. And so La Follette's argument was, well, after the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, the United States became the trustee for the TA land grant, and then they transferred that obligation on to Francisco Martinez, who was the trustee for the common lands for all of the Ijuela holders. In doing that, he stipulated to adverse possession for HND Land Company. In other words, he said, yes, HND Land Company owns the land they claim. They have owned it publicly and notoriously for more than 10 years. If it were legally possible for them to acquire the land under adverse possession, they would own the land in fee simple. But, according to La Follette's argument, they couldn't because they could only own it as a trustee. Now, the court in their decision identified an interest in considering these common property rights. So the court, these Ijuelas were very interesting documents that brought up an issue that the court didn't see any precedence for, didn't know necessarily how to deal with, and wanted to consider these questions. But since La Follette stipulated to adverse possession, they just ended the case and provided quiet title to HND Land Company because there was no way that any court would go behind any act of Congress. And the act of Congress was clear. It was a private land claim given to Francisco Martinez. Despite the loss in that first case, the Corporation of Abiquiu continued to operate as the official managers of the grant. And in the early 1940s, really right after that loss, a loss in which the court said, you have no right to common property claims in TA, they started managing the commons of the TA land grant. And they did this by receiving requests for property from various members in good standing of the Corporation of Abiquiu and giving them new deeds. And those individuals would pay rent to use various properties on the land grant. In addition, the Corporation of Abiquiu was mailing bills to non-heir landowners at 10 cents an acre, saying, you're not a member of the Corporation of Abiquiu, therefore you're going to have to pay 10 cents an acre for your use of this property. So of the almost 500,000 acres in the TA grant, almost half of that land was, more than half, was owned by large private out-of-state landowners who all received letters in the mail demanding rental payments. And in the court case that would follow, Medardo Beta said, we're not interested in creating a private land grant here. This is a community land grant. Anyone that lives here can use it, but they have to pay their fair share because they're not the right owner, the proper owners we are. The second case was a case in which I should have put this list up and left it up. William Kinderman, who purchased the property in 1937, died shortly after, but his estate was managed by a man named Carl Brusselbach. And Brusselbach received one of these rental demands and immediately sued the Corporation of Abiquiu. Specifically, he sued the person who had paid the Corporation of Abiquiu to rent land he claimed Kinderman had himself purchased as private land. So the Corporation of Abiquiu said, you don't own that in private. That's part of our commons, and we've provided access to that to one of our members. And so that case occurred in the mid-1940s, and it was a case called Flores v. Brusselbach. And it was a similar case. It was a similar case to the first one, except they got a different lawyer, number one. And they realized that they were going to have to overcome these private property claims in a number of ways. And one of the ways they did it was claimed adverse possession. So they said, we have been managing this land as long as we can remember. We don't even know this guy, Kinderman, or Brusselbach. No one by that name has ever lived there. They've never built a structure, never fenced it. Whereas we could demonstrate that we've used it since the late 19th century. And so their attorney slowly documented their use, which was notorious, which had occurred over the course of at least 10 years, which was the test to prove adverse possession. Although Brusselbach challenged their claim of adverse possession, that it was notorious, he'd never actually been to New Mexico to the land. And Kinderman, who had owned it before him, had only come down on three or four occasions during the time that he actually owned the land. So they really didn't have any demonstrable proof that they had anything to do with this property, whereas the Corporation of Abiquiu demonstrated in court that they had access to the land. They used it notoriously only for their own use. And, of course, they lost because the court concluded, well, you have demonstrated that you possess this property, but you didn't do it under any color of title. And this was the other legal test that the court would apply to any adverse possession. What right do you have to come onto someone else's land and claim ownership? You have to have some sort of title. And although the Corporation of Abiquiu claimed, well, our title is this from Francisco Martinez and through these Hijuelas, the courts determined that, but there was no organization called the Corporation of Abiquiu that held title to anything. And so this organization would have to prove that it had some sort of title in its name and that it managed the lands for the good of the members of the land grant. And so it lost on that count. And again, the court refused to consider any of the ways in which land grants were organized in New Mexico during the territorial period or before, refused to acknowledge the longstanding use, and rejected all those claims. And so the Corporation of Abiquiu decided to try to acquire some sort of color of title. March 1st, 1951, a group of Corporation of Abiquiu members petitioned the Riverbend County Commission to hold an election for a board of directors for the land grant. Now, according to the New Mexico Constitution, as long as a petition with a certain minimum number of signatures came before a county commission requesting that the county administer a vote for a land grant board, the county was obligated to do so. And you only needed six signatures, so they had plenty of signatures there on this petition. And so in a very brief meeting, the officers of the Corporation of Abiquiu petitioned the county commission to have an election. The county commission agreed and established election for April 2nd, 1951. But before they could actually get to the election, a series of large landowners sued them. It was actually a group of 24 landowners controlling more than 100,000 acres within the TA grant, none of whom actually live within the grant. All of them lived in either Colorado, Texas, or Oklahoma, and because they lived out of state, they went into federal court in this case to try to stop the county from having this election, explicitly arguing that this would color our title. This would create problems for us with our title. And although the court allowed the election to happen, it wouldn't allow the county to certify the election. So the election happened. I don't know if I have how many. Almost 3,000 people voted for six candidates, elected a county commission, a board of directors for the land grant. But the court concluded that, quote, throughout all these years, 70 years practically, since this grant was confirmed and the patent issued, it has been operated as a private land grant. No step has ever been taken by anyone until this proceeding or this election was called to have the control and management by a board of trustees, which was really quite remarkable because, of course, that was precisely the issue of the previous two court cases that the court ignored in coming to that conclusion. And again, the court determined that they couldn't go behind Congress in considering any of the sort of the social history of property in TA in coming to any resolution. And so by 1951, legal efforts to try to prove a color of title, demonstrate adverse possession, or establish common property rights had all been extinguished by various courts, both state and federal courts by now. Let me go back to that list. And in 1951, William Kinderman, again, he had passed away, but his the executive of his estate, a man named Brusselbach, who was the party in that 1954 lawsuit, sold the land to a southern New Mexico rancher named Bill Mundy. Bill Mundy, who some of you may recognize the name, became a fairly prominent figure in the conflict throughout the 1950s and 60s in Tierra Maria. He ended up buying land next to the president of the Corporation of Abiquiu, Jose Maria Martinez, who promptly sued him to eject him from the commons. He bought a little over 11,000 acres and immediately fenced it and ejected the sheep and cattle that were pastured there, owned by various members of the Corporation of Abiquiu, who had used this area north of Brazos, up against the mountain range in TA, for commons historically. Bill Mundy countersued to quiet his title to this property, and the court ended up, and the issue ended up in front of the New Mexico Supreme Court in the early 1950s. It was an extremely contentious one. This is the first time that some violence re-erupted in TA, both property violence and personal violence. With gunshot, I talked to Jose Maria Martinez's daughter, and there were occasional gunfights that would erupt over whether or not fences could go up or come down. And eventually the New Mexico Supreme Court concluded that we don't have to go back further than the Francisco Manzanares deed. That is the origin of the private property in TA, and is the deed that established all private property rights to Tierra Maria and extinguished all common property rights to the region. And in it, the attorneys for Bill Mundy argued that none of this is really the case that pivoted on the Huelas, because What happened was the attorneys for the heir said these hijuelas are deeds. They're nothing any different than a deed. They're a deed like any other property conveyance that that any court in New Mexico would honor, and therefore we have to honor them as deeds. And it was a bit of a miscalculation because the attorneys for Bill Bundy said, well, if they're deeds and they give people possession of property, demonstrate that they had possession. But none of the heirs could demonstrate possession. These were deeds that gave them common use of the resources. So they were occasional. They would occasionally go up and use it. But they didn't fence it. They didn't build structures on it, of course, because it was the common lands of the land grant. So that there were no permanent structures built. It wasn't fenced. It was used by everyone. And so the court suggested, well, if these are deeds, then they don't give anyone any property rights because you can't demonstrate that you actually executed them as deeds, and no one demonstrated possession of the property. And by the way, this was also the first court case that lawyers for the heirs used the word hijuela. Prior to this, they were always called called deeds, and suddenly, in this 1951 case, the attorneys for Jose Maria Martinez are there said, well, they're not exactly deeds, they're hijuelas. They're different, and that explains why they're different, but they still give heirs the same rights. But unfortunately, they didn't, according to the courts. And so the courts, even though Bill Mundy admitted finding evidence of long-standing use throughout the 11,000 acres that he bought, going back the roads, occasional corrals, evidence of corrals that he found, the courts rejected all these claims for common use of the land based on the fact that there was no possession of it. And so there was another case in the early 1960s, but this really was the final nail in the coffin of any legal efforts of Corporation of Abiquiu members to use the courts to try to figure out a way to reclaim or resurrect any common property claims that existed prior to the first going in the courts. But it didn't end efforts by the Corporation of Abiquiu to continue to assert, and more than assert, perform property claims in TA. And so in 1964, the Corporation of Abiquiu started to erect signs like this on the boundary of the land grant, requiring permits from anybody to do anything in Tierra Mia, hunting, fishing, anything. They mailed eviction notices to private non-heir landowners in TA. They deputized members of the Corporation of Abiquiu and sent them personally to some landowners to deliver eviction notices to tell them that the Corporation of Abiquiu claimed ownership over the entire land grant and they were officially evicted from the land grant. This is a copy of one of the eviction notices. These were three-page eviction notices that they mailed that cited their heirship of Manuel Martinez, giving them title, and then directing non-heirs to move off of the grant. They claimed they would take possession on October 20th. I don't know if it's actually on this page yet. So the eviction notice said, on October 20th, 1964, we're going to take possession of the land grant. And at that time, if anyone is still on the land grant that can't demonstrate being an heir as an hijuela or an heir of Martinez, they probably will be confiscated. The plan was to set up sentries at all the borders and extract port of entry fees along county roads if anyone wanted to travel through the TA land grant. On October 9th, 1964, Alfonso Sanchez, who was the district attorney at the time, petitioned the court for a permanent injunction against the Corporation of Abiquiu from doing any of these things that it claimed to do. And on October 15th, he received that permanent injunction. And it's interesting because the court hearing, the Santa Fe New Mexican wrote a story about that court hearing on October 15th, and the judge at the time rejected the existence of the corporation. He said, this group doesn't exist, literally doesn't exist. And a number of people took that to mean that they couldn't even go home. And in some ways, the journalist who wrote that story in 64 sort of used that story to suggest, oh, they don't even understand, they're confused, they don't even really know what's going on here. But in many respects, I think it was a an interesting reaction, because the common property claims were the thing that really made the sort of the social relations of a community land grant in New Mexico possible, the obligations and rights you get in that sort of reciprocal relationship as a community land grant. And to have that rejected by the courts, to many, meant that they lost all rights to access property in the Tierra Mira grant. That permanent injunction, by the way, still stands today. And not only was it placed against every single member of the Corporation of Abiquiu, but it was placed against every living heir to anyone that owned an ejuela or was given an ejuela, and any unborn heirs. So anyone that would be born later. And the injunction was against making a public claim to ownership to the Tiega. You couldn't assert it publicly. So they changed their name to Colonia Mexicana and started doing the same thing again in 1966. And started again publishing. This was a public notice they put in the Rio Grande Sun claiming ownership. There was a series of these saying that they were going to start charging for grazing fees in the Tierra Mira land grant. They were hauled into court at this time, and again, that permanent injunction was resurrected. It was this context. This is really the context of the courthouse raid in 67, but of course by 64 and 66, Tierrina and Alianza had been organizing and decided in June of 67 that they were going to enact the plan, the 64 plan of the Corporation of Abiquiu, and take over the Tierra Mira grant. So it was Alfonso Sanchez who used this permanent injunction from 64 as an excuse to try to stop that, the potential takeover of the TA grant in 67. And my computer's pausing. At the time, Tierrina was on record as saying the purpose of this meeting in Coyote on June 2nd is to take over the TA grant. We're going to talk about taking over the TA grant putting sentries on the borders, claiming ownership to it. Today, when I interviewed him, he said, "Well, no, that was my brother Cristobal who wanted to do that. I was a moderate, and I wasn't interested in taking it over." And when the police arrested Cristobal, in the sweep that led to the arrests, which is what precipitated the courthouse raid. For some reason, it's not letting me. It'll come up when I'm talking. They found battle plans in Cristobal Tierrina's trunk that included maps describing. I know this is hard to see, but this is a copy of a map of the area and the. This is the southern boundary of the TA grant. This is Abiquiu down here. And the idea was to set up checkpoints along the southern boundary of the TA grant where they assumed that the police or the National Guard would try to move. And most of the people that were arrested in these sort of sweeps that precipitated the courthouse raid were members of the Corporation of Abiquiu. This is Jose Maria Martinez, the guy that sued Bill Mundy in 51. He was arrested at his daughter's home the evening of the 3rd of June after bringing his cattle back in from a pasture. Three other officers of the Corporation of Abiquiu were arrested that same evening at their homes. They were arrested by themselves at their homes and charged with illegal assembly. And so that was really the context of the courthouse raid. And so I think one of my purposes today is to sort of talk about this longer history of not just resistance to private property claims, but efforts to perform and demonstrate certain kinds of property claims. They weren't merely asserting common property claims. They were trying to perform them as a way to demonstrate that to the courts, and they assumed they would go to the court, that they've been doing it all along. And of course, this didn't end in 67. In the early and mid-1970s, the Corporation of Abiquiu again started to distribute deeds to various members for property that was owned by large out-of-state ranchers and again were hauled into court. It happened again in the late 1980s, more recently, when Amador Flores and his family claimed land in TA based on Ijuelas. And this time they set up armed checkpoints. They dug trenches in what they thought would be a gunfight with police. They started to build community structures on the property. And they did all this while Amador Flores was actually in jail for contempt of court for not leaving the property that was owned by an out-of-state development corporation. Eventually, Amador Flores actually won the court case and got the land, but really on a technicality. There was ex parte communication between the lawyer for the development company and the judge, and so the development company settled out of court and gave Amador Flores all the land just so they didn't get sued. This property is owned today by the Corporation of Abiquiu, an organization that doesn't legally exist in the state of New Mexico. Let me just make some concluding comments on the TA case. What I'm interested in doing in writing about TA is demonstrating that these efforts of the Corporation of Abiquiu are not, these aren't resistance efforts really. Rather, these are ongoing efforts to not just claim but demonstrate their common property ownership to the grant. And it's really quite ironic, actually, that both historians and the courts have ignored their efforts to demonstrate, actually, through a material struggle for the land, that they own the land in common, because it's precisely those demonstrations of ownership that have brought these issues into the courts time and time again. But every time they get hauled into court, because they're demonstrating ownership, those demonstrations of ownership are ignored and aren't seen as relevant to the legal questions that arise in the courts. And I think most interestingly and perhaps most substantively, the rejection of common property claims has really transformed the individual relationships to the land that existed prior to the fencing that happened in the 20s and 30s. So not only are individual landowners who claim an heirship, whether through an Ijuela or through Francisco Martinez, prohibited from using grazing lands in the commons, collecting fuel wood, hunting, or using watering holes. But by doing that, that's really made illegal a whole set of social relations that community land grants are made on. In other words, these court cases have criminalized the community in TA. The community and the way that people express that sort of those community relations prior to the 1930s is now illegal in a certain sort of fundamental way, right? Because certainly community land grants in New Mexico give people rights to the commons, but there's certain obligations that accrue to individuals for that right. And there's this sort of reciprocal relationship in a community based on rights and obligations in a community land grant that has been made illegal in TA. And so in that sort of very real sense, the community has been criminalized. I don't have time to do this today. I'm wrapping this up now. The really interesting question now is the sort of the large upscale residential developments going on. So that same property that Jose Maria Martinez and Bill Mundy were fighting over is now being developed into large acre, multi-million dollar homes for out-of-state landowners, and is creating a whole separate set of questions around property and community relations in TA that's sort of yet to be resolved. And really yet to be considered in the context of this history we have before us. And I think I'll just stop there. That's a good enough place to stop. Thank you very much. Do we have time for questions?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. How many acres of property was Amador Flores awarded by the courts?
It was a little over 200 and some acres, less than 300 acres. It's very, and if you're driving into TA, just as you're coming down the hill into TA, you'll see a large sign of Emiliano Zapata on a billboard. That's the entrance to that property. It's right along the road as you're coming into TA. Yeah. And you could see the structure from the road, and you can still see some of the bunkers. But those bunkers are still there.
rather sophisticated. Who were the attorneys? What was the legal advice that people were receiving?
Well, that's a great question, and I've been trying to get a hold of records from attorneys that were involved, and so I haven't had any luck in finding any records to La Follette from the 30s. Beginning in the 30s, all of the ranchers that opposed in court any of the heirs were represented by an Albuquerque group called Seth and Montgomery. And it was a father and son, that Seth, Oliver Seth, and his son. And one attorney still lives in Santa Fe. He was a part of two of those court cases. He's in his 90s. I've had a couple phone conversations with him. His daughter has records related to the case, but I haven't been able to get a hold of those. So I really don't know how they were making their legal arguments, devising the legal arguments. In terms of the other side, the heirs, Jose Maria Martinez, had really one of the best attorneys in the state of New Mexico, Harry Bigby, who was a district court judge. He got involved in the case because the county hired him in the 1951 case when they were sued by the landowners for administering the election. And Bigby he's passed away, but his records may or may not be in a warehouse, maybe in Santa Fe. I've talked to a partner in the law firm that he used to work at, and they've told me they'll look for it, and I have to get back to them, but I don't have that yet. But I'm really interested in this. Like, how did they – because really it's in that 1950s that the word Ijuela is first used. It was never used prior to the 50s. So why did they come – why did they decide to call them Ijuelas? And if they did call them Ijuelas, why didn't they provide more context to the courts to explain what these were and why they looked different than deeds and all those kinds of things? Otherwise, though, the Martinez v. Mundy one is a very lengthy case. It produced a lot of paper, and it's a fascinating sort of legal conflict in that one. And also, there's a number of heirs that have documents from their grandparents, another grandchildren of people that were involved as litigants. And I'm trying to talk to folks about whether or not I can have access to this, because I at this point, how they were and what kind of discussions they were having about legal strategy and those kinds of questions, I have no idea, because it doesn't really show up in the I've looked at all the records for the court cases, but I don't have any of the records of the attorneys. So I can't really answer that question. Dennis?
David, for us, you've done a lot of archival research, but I know that you're also doing ethnographic-type research, oral histories, et cetera. I wonder if you could talk to us a bit about how a, quote, outsider gets access to that material.
I've had, it's interesting. I've had people are really interested to talk about TA, and it doesn't really seem to be, hasn't been difficult for me to get people to talk about this question. If I have questions, what's been difficult is talking to relatives of people that were involved who I find are much more reticent to talk about their fathers, mothers, grandparents. And I think part of the reason on that has nothing to do with me as an outsider, but it's that this history in TA is a contemporary conflict. Like, as I said at the beginning, Medardo Abeita is really sort of generally identified as one of the causes of land loss rather than this person that reorganized the land grant. And so his grandson is reticent to talk about him, fearing that, this is just going to get reinforced and my grandfather's going to continue to be blamed for all these failings. So I haven't had a lot, but again, I focused on archival work until really the last month or so. So I've done about 15 interviews with people currently active in Terra Mira land grant issues or relatives of people that were active. And I've been lucky enough to get people talk to me. But I think also that might be because most of them have heard me talk before, and I'm sympathetic to their arguments. And I'm not, I don't think my intent is not to make any definitive claims about what happened in the 19th century. I don't think I can do that. What I'm interested in is how the what may or may not have happened in the 19th century has motivated all kinds of different arguments about what should happen in the 20th century around property. And that, to me, is really fascinating. And that, and even that's been ignored by the courts. And so that's so I haven't had any difficulty, I think. But then again, maybe I don't know that I'm having difficulty. Maybe, you know, I do have to ask very specifically about who should I talk to next, and I get a lot of help that way. But was that what you were getting at, Dennis, or should I?
Of the 500,000 acre grant, were there any Native American year-round communities in that area, and have they tried to reclaim the land under Aboriginal land?
Well, you know, the Southern Ute Agency was in that region, and the United States entered into an agreement with the Utes in 1872 that opened up the area for settlement. And it was really only after that that settlement happened. So that agreement was signed between the Ute Nation and the federal government. And interestingly, Francisco Manzanares, the guy that bought the land here, he was Ute. He was a captive. He was captured as a child. Grew up in an Abiquiú family as a servant. When he was 18, he married and became a citizen. And so his, and in fact, there's a great story that him riding north with his family settling in the TA area would have been the first permanent settlement. And a group of Utes found out through the Southern Ute Agency that some people were moving up from Abiquiú to settle the area, and they rode out to stop them. And when they confronted them, Francisco Manzanares started speaking to them in Ute and said, "No, don't worry about it. I'm one of you." And then, and they allowed the settlement. In terms of the land grant itself in the legal cases, there haven't been any challenges in the 20th century, except to say that the portion of the Chino Valley Land Company that wasn't sold in 1909 was recently purchased by the Jicarillas. So the large portion of the land grant today is owned by the Jicarilla Apaches, the former Chama Land Valley Company ranch. So really the whole sort of the Chama area is owned by the Jicarilla Apaches. And apparently this is one of those interesting things. There's a story that there was an oral agreement that the Jicarillas made that if the TA land grant board could ever come up with the money to buy it back, they'd sell it to them for the same amount of money they bought it. And I said, well, has anyone ever told you that? I mean, did you talk to someone in the Jicarilla? No, I just know that's true. And I've called the Jicarillas, and no one's gotten back to me yet. So there's no evidence that exists, but there's sort of the story that, well, they'll give it back to us if we can buy it. Right? Yeah.
When Francisco Martinez gave out those deeds for Abuela, did he sell them, or was he giving them out for bone?
Well, there's no monetary figure on them, which is why it sort of suggests that, and why a number of people I've talked to about that 1861 letter that a couple of people sent to the Surveyor General complaining about him suggests that he made some sort of agreement to settle there. Because, I mean, if you think about it, even as the private property owner, he couldn't go up there and settle it himself. He needed a viable community to extract any kind of economic value, if that's what his interest was. To extract economic value, he needed communities there to do that. And so one way to speculate on this is to suggest that he made some sort of, you know, agreement that since he's the one named, you know, he's the son of Manuel, he'll request it from the Surveyor General. You have to remember at this time period, the Surveyor General was getting a lot of private land claim requests, and so this was what the Surveyor General's office was receiving. So those appear to be documents that acknowledge rights that people already had. And that's one of the problems from the court cases in the 20th century, that he actually used those words. Really, when they translated it in English, it read sort of, "I acknowledge your rights to the grant," rather than "I convey you this right to the grant." And so that was that created problems in the courts that followed. But no, there was no... It didn't describe any financial transaction.